Can you take me back where I came from? Can you take me back? Can you take me back where I came from? Brahma, can you take me back? Can you take me back?
I'm no musicologist, but my father is.
Pete Seeger.
He once explained to me that in the early days, mankind only had one music. In a hunting and gathering tribe, the hunters knew all the same hunting songs or warrior songs. The women knew all the same lullabies and berry-picking songs. But when mankind got a little smarter, hard luck, why, wealth began to be accumulated and an aristocracy developed, which now could afford to have professional musicians make music for them. And we begin to find two kinds of music arising. That is the professional music done for the kings and the chiefs, and the old songs still sung by the workers and the peasants and all. Then, as feudalism develops still further and cities arise, you find people in the cities are now rich enough to pay for musicians, and people come into the marketplace and play for pennies, for example. And these are professional musicians, but very often, originally, they were just folk musicians out in the village. But now they come into town and play for tips on Saturday during the market. And this is the origins of pop music. It's a professional music which draws upon both folk music and fine arts music as well.
John Gilliland's The Pop Chronicle.
Now, Chapter 1 of The Pop Chronicles. Play a Simple Melody.
If popular music is one of those mirrors in which a society catches an occasional valid glimpse of itself, then it was a visibly nostalgic face that Americans held up to the pop looking glass at mid-20th century. For in various ways, the hit parade throughout the fledgling 50s gives back a likeness of an America looking backward.
Dearie, do you remember when we waltzed to the Sousa band? My, wasn't the music grand? Chowder parties down by the seashore. Every 4th of July, test your memory, my dear.
In the more obvious area of the rejuvenated oldie or standard song, 1950 through 52 were banner years for the backward look. Dragged out and dusted off for second and sometimes third-run popularity were dozens of Tin Pan Alley antiques. Do you remember?
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Lead us less too far, we wonder. Love's sweet voices calling yonder. Shine.
To tell you the truth, I'll be lonely.
First you say you do, and then you don't. And then you say you will, and then you won't. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do?
And there were a number of freshly minted top tunes that had a decidedly old-fashioned swagger to them.
All I want is having you and you.
At the same time, post-war migratory movements in the USA were setting the stage for a renaissance in rusticity in some earthy musical items from regions far afield of Ten Pan Alley.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island.
Rural people everywhere were packing up and moving to the cities and taking with them their preferences for a backwoods brand of music.
40 days, 40 nights, since my baby left this town. Sun shining all day long.
Blues people from the Mississippi Delta were hooking up with Reddy Kilowatt in the ghetto areas of Chicago and Detroit and elsewhere, and were laying down an urbanized hybrid of the blues that would revolutionize the course of pop music the world over. Singers, banjo pickers, and assorted folk types like Woody Guthrie and Huey Leadbelly Ledbetter were transforming New York's arty Greenwich Village into one big hootenanny. It was in the village, in a place called the Vanguard, that pop conductor-arranger Gordon Jenkins first heard a very promising folk-style quartet. He hustled them into a Decca recording studio, and the two-sided hit which resulted set a definite tone and approach for the future.
Tinda, 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 can't you hear the music playing in the city square? Tinda, 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 come where all our friends will find us with the dancers there. Tinda, tinda, join the celebration, there'll be people there from every nation. Dawn will find us laughing in the sunlight, dancing in the city square. Tinda, tinda, bump and dance the horror.
Tenda, 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 can't you hear the music playing in the city square? Tenda, 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 come where all our friends will find us with the dancers there.
Tenda, 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 can't you hear the music playing in the city square? Tenda, 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 come where all our friends will find us with the dancers there. Tenda, 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 can't you hear the music playing in the city square?
They called themselves the Weavers, and they came from as diverse backgrounds as those of the songs they sang. The most widely known member of the group, Pete Seeger, was the son of a noted musicologist. The others...
Lee Hayes is a big son of a Methodist preacher, and... Ronnie Gilbert and Fred Hellerman are both New Yorkers. I was raised in New England. We all met in New York and decided to form a group which would go so far as to do the unthinkable thing of rehearsing. Lee and I had formerly sung in a group with Woody Guthrie called the Almanac Singers, and Woody used to say, this is the only group that ever rehearses on the stage. But the Weavers tried to do, in a way, what Benny Goodman did with jazz, that is, work out arrangements which were based upon improvisation. They were head arrangements. We often didn't write them down until we'd sung them for weeks. Then, of course, to our own surprise, we suddenly became big money. Goodnight Irene sold 2 million records in 1950.
Good night.
Well, this was Leadbelly's song. He put it together out of fragments of older songs. And he was once in prison, and when he left prison, he gave a concert for all the other men who were still there, and this was their final last request of the evening. The song doesn't mention prison, it just mentions a girl who married a rambler and a gambler and the hard times she had. And after Leadbelly died, the Weavers made the record. In fact, it was only about 6 months later, 6 months after he died. Poor guy, he never knew any great commercial success. If he could have lived 10 or 15 more years, he would have seen all his dreams come true, his ambitions as a musician.
On top of old Smoky, all covered with snow,
I lost my true lover for courting so slow.
For courting's a pleasure.
For courting's a pleasure.
But parting is grief.
But parting is grief.
And a false-hearted lover.
And a false-hearted lover.
Worse than a thief.
It's worse than a thief.
A thief will just rob you.
A thief will just rob you.
And take what you have.
And take what you have.
But a false-hearted lover.
But a false-hearted lover.
Will lead you to the grave.
Will lead you to the grave.
And the grave will decay you.
And the grave will decay you.
Turn you to dust.
And turn you to dust.
A poor girl can trust.
A poor girl can trust.
They'll hug you and kiss you.
They'll hug you and kiss you.
Tell you more lies.
And tell you more lies.
Than cross ties on a railroad.
Than cross ties on a railroad.
Or stars in the sky.
Or stars in the sky.
It seems silly now, but the Weavers raised some knotty problems for the American pop people. The problem of classification, for example. It's been rumored that Variety and Billboard held a joint conference on that troubling matter at one time and heard some learned musicological dissertations with titles like, Are the Weavers Rhythm and Blues or Country and Western?
Well, I can see there's a point drawing lines, but I'd say leave that up to the anthropologists. The folklorists, rather. That's their business. They go and get PhDs to learn how to draw those lines. But for you and me, the important thing is a song, a good song, a true song, a song you want to learn and pass on, and not its definition. You can put it in, call it anything you want. Call it an art song, call it a pop song, a scat song, a jazz song, call it nothing. The name is really of less importance.
So come all you young maidens.
Come all you young maidens.
Listen to me.
And listen to me.
Never place your affection.
Never place your affection.
On a green willow tree.
On a green willow tree.
For the leaves they will wither.
The leaves they will wither.
The roots they will die.
The roots they will die.
You will all be forsaken.
You will all be forsaken.
And you never know why.
And never know why.
The Pop Chronicles will continue in a moment.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling. On this our wedding day.
Truly, truly fair. Truly, truly fair. How I love my truly fair.
The man responsible for these and numerous other 50s hits was an unlikely kind of pop star. He was a bearded fugitive from classical music, an oboe player named Mitch Miller.
Up in the morning, out on the job, work like the devil for my pay.
In his initial pop outing in the 40s, Mitch had helped transform a Chicago recording outfit, Mercury, from struggling independent to major hit producer. By 1951, he was sitting on top of the pop world, chief of artist and repertoire. or the guy who called the shots for the mighty Columbia record empire headquartered in New York. One of the secrets of his success.
I figured, why not go for sounds that I found exciting as a symphony musician?
The French horn sound, for instance.
And we did exactly that.
As I cruised out one evening upon the night's career, I spied a lofty clipper ship, and to her I did steer. I hoisted out my signal, which she so quickly knew. And when she saw my bunting fly, she immediately hove to.
Thanks to Mitch, the French horn dominated the pop sound of the early 50s, like the fishbeat drum and clink-clink piano would dominate Stone Age rock and roll a few years hence. Also thanks to Mitch, a husky-voiced young crooner stepped out of Columbia's backup chorus and into the front ranks of the solo warblers.
It's a very funny story. See, Sinatra at that time, when he was with Columbia, and it was his last year of his contract, and they had advanced him a lot of money.
I'm sentimental, so I walk in the rain.
He was in debt, as a lot of us, you know, you can easily be in this business. And he said to me when I came, try to give him the best songs possible so we can earn the money back. I found two songs, and I wired Frank, called him up, and said, on your way to Spain, I would love for you to stop over. I have the arrangements all made, and I have these two songs that I'm sure you can't miss on. I really, because between the two of them, I was that confident. Well, I met him at LaGuardia, I'll never forget, and we went right to the Columbia office in the morning. It was around 8 in the morning, and I played him these two songs. And they were strange in the sense that no one had done anything like that. And I told him what the orchestration was, you know, three French horns and a chorus. And he looked at his two pals and he says, I don't like that kind of crap. So I was stuck. I had the musicians hired. I had the studio hired. So to save the investment, I called on this young kid who I had just heard and we had signed for Columbia. His name was Al Chernick, and he changed it to Guy Mitchell. He wanted part of my name and his name. Against my better judgment, I had to allow him. Well, he had a double-sided hit. Both sides became number one. It was The Roving Kind and My Heart Cries for You. And so, goodness knows, maybe if Frank made them, his public wouldn't have accepted them. But the point was, it didn't increase his liking for me at the time.
Plum and a apricot or two, eh? Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you figs and dates and grapes and cakes, eh? Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything.
With Columbia stars like Frankie Lane, Doris Day, Guy Mitchell, and Rosemary Clooney, Mitch Miller set the pace for much of Hit Parade Americana in the early 50s.
With Tony Bennett, I was the first to do Hank Williams as a pop composer. with Cold Cold Heart.
I try so hard, my dear, to show that you are my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil.
With Frankie Lane, Mitch produced a string of hits. That Lucky Old Sun, High Noon, I Believe, and
Without a pair of horns, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. If ever an angel fell, Jezebel, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. If ever a pair of eyes promised paradise, Jezebel, it was you. If ever the devil's plan was made to torment man, it was you, Jezebel, it was you. 'Twould be better had I never known a lover such as you. Forsaking dreams and all for the siren call of your arms. Like a demon, love possessed me, you obsessed me constantly. What evil star is mine that my fate's design should be? Jezebel.
To me, Frankie was the epitome of what I like to call the working stiff. He was a guy who could bring as much forcefulness to an interpretation as a guy as a man. So his virility was not, his vocal virility wasn't at all false. It was just an extension of himself. And I looked for songs that did that.
In 1954, Mitch had come up with a pair of songs which he felt were perfect vehicles for hitmaker Lane. But a personal tragedy kept Frankie out of the studio, and Mitch turned to the foremost female vocalist in his Columbia stable, Rosie Clooney. One of the tunes was a kind of country spiritual written by a preacher-type composer, Stuart Hamblin.
He had this song that he had recorded called This Old House. And it was full of marvelous imagery, but he had recorded it on the country label, and the way he sang it, I don't say it was wrong, but it just didn't arouse anybody.
For the flip side, Mitch picked a ballad by a pair of up-and-coming young Broadway tunesmiths.
There was a show on then called The Pajama Game, and it had a song in it called
Hey There.
And I had made that with Johnny Ray. And Johnny, who was one of the hottest artists at that time, this record just lay there. Nobody bought it. And I tried to analyze why, and I found out that the people didn't know that he was singing to himself. In the show, the lead in Pajama Game, he sings to a dictaphone, and then he plays back the song and sings on top of it. Well, I asked the writers to write a verse that was not in the show that would set the stage for the person singing to themselves. And I forget the lyrics, but Adler and Ross wrote, somewhere in the silence of my lonely room, in the gloom or something, I say to myself, and then they went into the song.
Lately when I'm in my room, all by myself, in the solitary gloom, I call to myself.
Then in the second chorus, I had Rosie talking back to herself.
Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes.
Are you talking to me?
Love never made a fool of you.
Not until now.
You used to be too wise.
Yes, I was once.
I went out to the coast to do just those two sides. Since Frankie didn't want to do this old house, so he went out and did this old house and Hey There, and put them out back to back, and both were number one songs, and that record sold about 2.5 million.
This old house is afraid of thunder. This old house is afraid of storms. This old house just groans and trembles when the night wind flings its arms. This old house is a-getting feeble. This old house is a-needing paint. Just like him, it's tuckered out, but he's a-getting ready to meet the saints.
Ain't gonna need this house no longer. Ain't gonna need this house no more.
Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor.
You are listening to The Pop Chronicles. Once again, Mitch Miller.
I always thought that the pop song field was like a 3-4 ring circus. All different kinds of songs going on at the same time, and one kind of song may occupy the center ring, because if they're successful with an artist, it's a kind of business where everyone runs like sheep. It's the nature of America. To innovate means sticking your neck out. Very few people want to take the chance of being wrong. But once somebody has proved themselves, everyone wants to run and get on the bandwagon. So they call it a trend, but it's really hindsight, and they're catching up. And they make a buck catching up. But in the meantime, my idea was to always take a chance to try to do something distinctively new.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see.
Already with the snare drums, Mitch, you know. You know, wow, man, that's too much in the eardrums.
If Mitch Miller was the monarch of American pop music in the young 50s, Stan Freberg was its court jester.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her, pardon me. That's just a shade loud on the snare drum.
She's the sweetest little rosebud at Texas Avenue. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
See, now you've covered up sparkle like the dew. One of the loveliest parts in the whole
Texas is the only girl for me.
Covered up the piccolos there with a Rio Grande is flowing and starry skies, that's better. She walks along the river on the quiet. Oh, that's so much better. I know that she remembers when they parted long ago. You know that there's just a world of difference. Mercy.
She's the sweetest little rosebud at Texas Avenue.
Why do you do that? Why do you burst out like that? Irritates me. That irritates me. That irritates me. That's all. But the yellow rose of Texas. Hold on! Smart aleck Yankee drummer, you can cover up yelling, you can cover up rose, buddy, but don't you cover up pictures, or I'll stick your head through that cotton picking snare drum and secede from the band. So help me, Mitch Miller, I will.
And the yellow rose of Texas will be mine forevermore.
Cut it off there, the record's over, you idiot. Stop it. Stop it, I'll say. Just stop it now. Stop it. I'm getting out of here. He ruined the ending. One of the loveliest parts in the whole. Peace.
Stan Freberg's career on record actually began off records during a stint in a nightclub. It was there he developed John and Marcia, a two-word spoof of the radio soap opera.
John. Marcia. John. Marcia. John?
Marcia.
John.
Marcia?
I had wondered for years why soap operas took 5 days to tell a story, you know, that could have been told in about 5 minutes. They stretched it out. They really milked that stuff, you know. And this dialogue went on and on and on. This inane dialogue. So when I was during a brief period of my life working in the nightclubs, I tried to see if I could do a soap opera utilizing only the people's names in the story. To see, it was just an exercise in the emotions. And I never intended it to be such a phenomenal thing as it turned out, apparently. And So people used to laugh every time I'd say, John, and the other would say, Marcia, you know, and then they'd laugh, and they'd think, well, here comes the dialogue now, and I go, John, you know, and then they would slowly get the idea that these people were never going to say anything more than each other's names, so that every time I would say it, they would get funnier and funnier, until I finally ended up crushing the microphone to myself, Marcia. You know, like, Marcia, on the end. And I'd leap up and say, tune in again tomorrow for another thrilling chapter, which was Marcia, really a big scream
scene. Marcia, Marcia. John, John, John. Marcia, 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 Marcia. John, 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 John. Marcia. John. Marcia.
So, Ken Nelson at Capitol Records, who was my A&R man for many years, thought that would make an amusing single record. And without the people there laughing, and without seeing me visually doing it, your mind really was carried away. I discovered after I made the record that, it sounds strangely off color in places, and I didn't really intend it to be that way at all.
The story of Little Blue Riding Hood is true. Only the color has been changed to prevent an investigation.
This is the woods. My name is Wednesday. I work out a homicide. Monday, February the 2nd, 10:22 a.m. Bumped into Chicken Lickin', told me the sky was falling. I booked her on the 614, turned her over to the psychiatrist. Then a call came in at a 503. When I was on my way to the 503, a 618 came in. I added up the 614, the 503, and the 618, got 1735. I handed in my paper to the chief. He corrected it, gave me 100%, patted me on the head, told me I was a good cop.
The Freebergian gamut ran all the way from a scorching satirical attack on the late Senator Joseph McCarthy to some jocular jabs at television's indefatigable Lawrence Welk.
Either it's a real sinister threat to our societies in the case of McCarthy, or in the case of Welk, it is simply a threat to my peace of mind in the living room, let us say, you know.
Bubbles in the wine.
The Pop Chronicles will continue in a moment.
So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. What a long time since I've been home. And I've got to be gripped in the law.
Pop music is like a giant amoeba. It has that amoebic ability to assimilate, diffuse, and often render harmless many of the outside elements which it does not immediately understand. A prime example was Pop's initial reaction to the folk music phenomena in 1950. Listen closely to the old Weavers' hits. Note the use of the lush orchestrated backgrounds and the big vocal choruses.
Pete Seeger.
Decca not only wanted us all to always to record with an orchestra, but they insisted on changing the words from time to time. One of our favorite songs was Woody Guthrie's Dust Bowl song, So Long, Been Good to Know You, So Long, So On. And Decca says, now, nobody's interested in dust storms. Can't you put some general verses to that? It's a good tune, but get some verses which anybody can sing anywhere. And Woody Guthrie, somewhat reluctantly, agreed with us, said, well, okay, we'll try it. And he came up to Gordon Jenkins' hotel room and sprawled on the floor and scrawled on a big piece of brown paper some verses right then and there, which we recorded for Decca in 1950, late 1950.
He did the verses, I didn't know that.
He wrote these new verses. But both Woody and the Weavers were glad when some years later we got back to singing the old Dust Bowl verses, because they really are better. And Decca was wrong. Just because the songs were about a dust storm is no reason the rest of the world couldn't sing them, Jesuit. Mm-hmm. Dusty old dust is a-getting my home, and I got to be drifting along.
Now, it may have been that Decca wasn't really as concerned about the dust storm references as it was about some not exactly favorable allusions to churches and preachers in the original Guthrie verses. Here's the way it came out in the 1951 hit version.
My telephone rang and it jumped off the wall. That was the preacher making a call. He said, we're waiting to tie the knot. You're getting married, believe it or not. Well, the church, it was jammed. The church, it was packed. The pews were crowded from the front to the back. 1,000 friends waited to kiss my new bride. But I was so anxious, I rushed her outside, told them, so long, it's been good.
And the original verse, as sung by the Weavers at Carnegie Hall in 1955.
Well, the telephone rang and it jumped off the wall. That was the preacher, he was making his call. He says, kind friends, this may be the end. You've got your last chance at salvation of sin. Well, the church was jammed and the church, it was packed. The pews were so crowded from the front to the back that the preacher could not read a word of his text. So he folded his specs, took up the collection, said,
so long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. What a long time since I've been home, and I gotta be drifting alone.
What Decca didn't realize is that poetry is a wonderfully ambiguous thing, and a song doesn't mean just one thing. It means two things, or 10 things, or 100 things, or 1,000,000 things, depending on who or is singing, or where you are, who you're singing to.
But for the most part, pop music in the fledgling 50s meant simple things. There was simplification in melody, in lyrics, and in execution.
Arranger-conductor Nelson Riddle.
The things became highly tailored. The Perry Como side, for instance, became so pared down that there was hardly an ounce of music left, and yet there was enough music, and it was well enough done to get through. But everything was, it was like a car that had all the chrome taken off it and was just stripped down to a money-making weapon. And that's what the singles seemed to be of those days.
Say the sun will never shine again, and say the rose that blooms will never bloom again. But come what may, I know I must have you again. My darling, say you're mine again.
Sometimes a hit single had a simple country flavor.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. I remember the night and the Tennessee waltz. Now I know just how much I have lost. Yes,
since I lost my little darling, the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
Or it borrowed an infectious but simple melody from the past, in this instance, an old English bawdy song, and reproduced it, simply and sanitized.
While I was walking down the beach one bright and sunny day, I saw a great big wooden box a-floating in the bay. I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, ooh, I discovered a... right before my eyes, ooh, I discovered a... right before my eyes.
Occasionally, pop music seemed to be on the verge of surpassing its simplicity, maybe even about to discover itself.
Unforgettable, that's what you are. Unforgettable, though near or far. Like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does things to me. Never before has someone been more unforgettable in every way.
Then it either went simple again, like a man suddenly struck deaf and dumb. Or it went off on a flight of pure fantasy and froth. The Americanization of those mysterious sounds from foreign shores. Really foreign, man, because they sounded just as strange over there as they did over here.
Wasn't a bad influence, because overcomplication is very disconcerting.
Nelson
I
Riddle.
Learned to write very simply in those days, and maybe develop one particular sound for a record, and stay out of the way of the lyrics, and make the whole thing very, very simple, and yet not, and yet maintain a degree of music in the backgrounds that seemed to be a little more ostentatious than, say, a Perry Como side. I don't know why I should pick on him. There were many, many others who became such a weapon for making money and ear-catching that they seemed to lose all musical content.
There were a few exceptions to the simplicity rule. We turned an untrained Italian-American operatic-type tenor into our first 50s teen idol and paired him off with Catherine Grayson in a lot of dandy Technicolor movies by MGM.
My love for no one else can end this yearning.
Mario Lanza.
It's need that you and you alone create. Just fill my arms the way you filled my dreams, the dreams that you inspire.
We learned how to make some great-sounding hit records with one guitar, one voice, and a lot of scotch tape and patience.
Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Somewhere there's music.
On occasion, we heard talented artists like Nat Cole and Nelson Riddle transform a fair song into an exceptional single.
Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art?
Nat Cole had chosen the song himself.
He was very, very clever picking his material. That really was the secret of his success, because wherever he'd go, people would throw songs at him, and he'd kick them around and play them and think about them in the dressing rooms all over the country. And he came up with most of his hits, the great majority. I remember counting 15 hit records that he'd had in one stretch there, and he had picked 14 of them. You can't beat that.
Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art? Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa.
In a moment, a preview of the next chapter in John Gilliland's The Pop Chronicles.
Going out to eat, but it's great after staying out late, walking my baby back home.
Next on the Pop Chronicles, the conclusion of Play a Simple Melody, our survey of American pop music in the early 50s, just prior to the rock and roll revolution, starring two of the era's most sensational song stylists.
You feel better if you cry.
John Alvin Ray, sometimes known as the Prince of Wales.
Hundreds and hundreds of times over the years, I've had reporters say to me, upon, you know, walk into a room at a press conference, they say, you know, is it true, Mr. Ray, you cry real tears?
And Catherine Starks, alias K-Star.
I've never been a boop-boop, did-um-dot-um-wad-um-chew singer.
Please let it be now.
Thank you.
The Pop Chronicles are written, narrated, and produced by John Gilliland. Associate producer, Chester Coleman. Guests on this program in order of their appearance were Pete Seeger, Mitch Miller, Stan Freeberg, and Nelson Riddle. Theme music, The Beat Goes On, was written by Sonny Bono and performed by Vanilla Fudge. Your announcers, Tom Beck and Cy Holliday.